A ton going on in the National Football League as camps are underway across the entire league. And we got a whole bunch to talk about with our next guest. That is Chris Thomas tonight with you until 10 o'clock. Let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline and welcome in Greg Allman, national writer for Fox Sports. Make sure you check out his work there. Greg, before we get into some on-the-field stuff, what do you make of what's going on in Las Vegas and now, I guess, elsewhere with Christian Wilkins? There's reports of him with inappropriate conduct towards another teammate and not disclosing injury information. What do you make of all this?
Yeah, I think there's probably more afoot than a kiss on the forehead, to be honest. Yeah. But no, it's one of those where, you know, it's a really hard thing for an NFL team to have the confidence to basically void out, you know, whatever it is, $37 million in bonuses. You know, it's hard. It's kind of like a divorce almost for an NFL team when you had made such a big, you know, I mean, you go 2 years ago, it's one of the bigger signings, period, in free agency, is them giving him $110 million. So you get a GM change, you get a coaching change, a lot of things change, and, you know, they find ways to get out of contracts, they're going to do it. I think we'll probably hear more about everything involved here as things shake out.
You think he could find a new home this season?
You know, I don't know physically where he is. I mean, a big part of why they're cutting him loose is the way that foot injury has been handled. So I don't know if that's something that's easily remedied. I would think if he's close to being ready, they wouldn't have much of a case for everything he's done to avoid those guarantees. So I guess we'll know more in terms of what his current physical condition is. That's the only real limitation. He was a great defensive tackle. I mean, he's the same guy, minus, I guess, a headache or two now, that he was 2 years ago when he was, you know, one of the more coveted young. I mean, those guys don't always get to the open market the way they did. So I would think if he's healthy, he definitely has a home somewhere.
Broncos linked up their veteran receiver, Cortland Sutton, for a $92 million extension. Do you think he was worth that?
It felt a little high, honestly. I don't know. It's one of those where he's coming off his best year. I think it's smart to have somebody you can pair with Nick, you know, as one. I think they're building out their depth there at receiver as well. But, made sense. It's a good offense to be in. I think that'll be a better offense just from year two with Bo Nix. You know, Sean Payton's one of the better offensive minds in the league. So I guess it's one of those where, if they wait a year and he has another year like what he just had that validates that year, then he's probably up in the high 20s. I guess it doesn't take much for these receivers to get really expensive right now. So it made sense to me. Like I said, I thought it was a little high. That's all.
When it comes to the Browns, there's reports surfacing that they may look to trade out one of their quarterbacks before the season starts. If they do, which one do you think makes the most sense?
It doesn't really make a lot of sense to have both rookies, honestly. So it's one of those where they got a tricky deal where they have to play both rookies enough to showcase them and get something back. You're probably not going to get the pick you put into them, honestly. But it's I don't know that I would carry, you know, rostering four quarterbacks is great, but not when they're the four quarterbacks they have. So, if somebody really big gets hurt, you know, in theory, you could take Flacco and deal him to a better team that needs what they feel like a good starter is. I don't know that Pickett has a ton of value. So no, if you're a team that doesn't have a developmental third quarterback and you can get the lesser of Gabriel or Shedeur Sanders, those are two guys that, you know, definitely had people that liked them in the draft process. It just, that didn't show up at the draft in terms of where they went. And I think you'll be able to get one of those two for less than they paid for them or selected them with in April, I think. So yeah, it doesn't make sense to then have four, but again, that whole process of adding four quarterbacks in 2 months, the way they did, doesn't really make a whole lot of sense.
Bucks reworked Mayfield's contract. Is that simply just trying to move money down the road to create more cap space, or what is that deal?
No, it has no cap impact at all. Bucks have like $30 million in cap space. They have ample cap space that they will roll over and not use a big chunk of. I think this is just trying to placate Mayfield and make him happy. He has 2 years left on his deal, and I don't think they want to set the precedent of giving somebody with 2 years left a new deal. And what this does is, you know, allay any injury concerns he has in terms of if he were to get hurt and take a significant injury, you know, he didn't have any guaranteed money in 2026. And now, at least against injury, he has $30 million guaranteed against injury. So that definitely is an olive branch and a step towards, hey, if you have another great year, there will be a much bigger deal in line for you after this season. I think it's just a way to keep things good. I think they know they have good value in him to get him for whatever it was, 3 years, $100 million, when lesser quarterbacks are fetching $55 million a year right now.
How much of a believer are you in Bowles? I know him and Jason Light got the extensions. Do you think he could be the guy in Tampa?
I think so. I mean, it's one of those where, I mean, they had never won back-to-back division titles in their history before he got there, and he's won three in a row in his 3 years as head coach. They've gotten better by record every year. Haven't necessarily had the playoff success you want. I think that this is a year where he'll have a chance to maybe improve on that. But no, I mean, I think the players like him. I think the results, again, they're in a bad division, so winning a division title doesn't mean as much as if they were in, you know, NFC North right now, definitely. But yeah, they've been in a bad division for much of their 50 years and have never gone back-to-back. So I think that sustained success. The Bucs is a franchise. People forget what it was like before Tom Brady. But the idea of scoffing at a team only winning 10 games or only winning 9 games, there are lots of years where people would have given up a lot to get that in Tampa.
When it comes to the NFC East, we're looking at a couple of big storylines there as well. What do you make of Jerry continuing to try to run the show there in Dallas? And it seems like the two sides aren't budging in terms of the Micah Parsons deal.
Yeah, that's one of those where, again, that's Jerry being Jerry. And I think the people there are probably more used to it and understand it. But yeah, I mean, inflaming the principals on your team and putting things maybe, I mean, to do it as publicly as they do, I'm amazed they're able to keep the A-list players they have in terms of, you know, locking up Prescott, locking up CeeDee Lamb. Again, Mike is going to take more money than any defensive player in history. That's going to be $42 million a year or something like that. It's just going to be an awkward and difficult and public negotiation until it gets done. And it's tricky. I mean, if you go back to, you know, end of last season, we didn't know if they were going to have, you know, Parsons or if they were going to get CeeDee Lamb. There was a time when Prescott was uncertain. So it's one of those, for most franchises, you'd be thrilled that they can keep their three core all pro players. At the same time, those three guys together haven't necessarily amounted to a whole lot so far. When you think about playoff wins and impact and changing a franchise, I get that they want to keep them and they want to build around those three, but it hasn't necessarily resulted in much up to this point.
Speaking of making an impact, do you think Von Miller makes an impact for the Commanders?
You know, I'll be curious. He was a lot better in 24 than he was in 23. I don't think he has to be a 600-snap pass rusher for them. I think he can be a rotational guy, a third-down pass rusher. You know, sometimes you can bring in those vets and just say, look, we're going to give you 20 downs. You know, if you can get sacks on one or two of them, it's really a good return on the money. He's infinitely less expensive than he's been for the last couple teams he's played for. I think it's smart for him to, you know, again, take one more chance to chase a ring. He's got a great team he's going to, a team that already has a lot of place, you know, people in place. If you can add a first ballot Hall of Famer who's still got a little bit left in the tank, it's probably a smart add for them.
I know Russell Wilson was named the starter, continuing with the NFC East coverage here, as we're talking with Greg Allman, Fox Sports NFL national writer. Russell Wilson will start the season, but are you a Jackson Dart guy? Do you think he's going to get any real run with the Giants as a rookie?
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those where it's hard. I don't necessarily see Russell Wilson winning a ton of games with the Giants. And if he's not, you know, if they come out of the gate 2-4 or something like that, even more so than a year ago when, you know, Justin Fields was there, I think there's a respect. And I think you get Russell Wilson to come to town and sign with you when you don't know what else you have at quarterback by promising he'll get the first shake, you know. But again, if he's not winning, the Giants have little or no reason to not turn to Jackson Dart and see what they have there. If, you know, the coach and the GM there are on thin ice, one way you can buy yourself time, if you're going to be middling, is to be middling with a rookie quarterback, where it's like, hey, this guy's still developing. This guy's somebody we believe in. Last thing you want to do is take that, you know, first round quarterback and put him with a new offense, a new head coach, and disrupt his progress. So that can be a lifeline sometimes. I just don't know if they're going to go to it in week one.
Who do you have going into the season as the best team in the NFC West?
You know, it's a good question right now. It's probably one of the better divisions to ask that question for and actually get a variety of answers. I would say Rams over Niners right now. There's some people that are very high on the Niners. I think it's easy to write off some of their issues last year with injuries, but they've also lost some key people. I think the Rams, on the other hand, are a team that got really young, had a ton of rookies on their defense that are just finding themselves, added some key pieces in terms of veterans to add to the mix. You know, a big part of the Rams is probably whether Stafford can stay healthy. you know, that's going to be a question. But if he is, I think they're the team to beat there. And I think both are playoff teams, but I think the Rams are a solid favorite to win the West.
Did you think there was going to be a major move made earlier last week when Justin Fields went down? Was that your inclination?
I think had it been, you know, an Aaron Rodgers type major injury, yeah, I wondered right away. Like, are they the team that, you know, takes Cousins off Atlanta's hand or something like that? And unfortunately, you know, it's just a toe. We don't really know how serious a toe injury, but not a major season disrupting injury. And I'm happy for Justin Fields. That would have been terrible if, you know, basically twice in 3 years, you lose the guy people were excited about being the quarterback with the Jets. So it sounds like it's something that won't require anything like that. If it was, I don't know that they would be committed to trying to win with Tyrod Taylor for a full year like that.
Now, if you were Raheem Morris, because you mentioned us here in Atlanta with the Falcons, interesting decision to make over the next couple of weeks. If you're Raheem Morris and Terry Fontenot, do you play Cousins in the preseason to show him off that he's healthy, or do you hold him back to prevent any further injury?
Oh, I think the gamble is worth it. I think if people have any doubts about him being back and playing the way he was before he was, you know, kind of hurt last year, kind of the way he played against the Bucs last year, if you will, I think that helps. If you can just put him out there, it's a fairly low risk of injury. That could happen, and that could set him back just because it would guarantee things and take away the option of trading him away. But no, I think if you put him in there, it's good for the people around him to have somebody else to throw to. There's a decent drop off from 2 to 3 there. So no, I wouldn't mind that. And if he comes out and throws 2 touchdowns and reminds people he can be a good quarterback, you know, that might be a recency bias that helps people feel better about trading for him or taking him as an option if they lose a quarterback to injury.
If I said they could get a 4th round pick back for him, do you think that's fair?
Oh, I'd be thrilled. If you got a 4 and like didn't have to eat major chunks of that salary, I would run to the table, turn that ticket in and take it. I mean, this is somebody who, you know, everybody knows they don't want to keep. Like you said, there's still kind of a little bit of a, is he hurt, is he not hurt kind of question. So I think there's a sliding scale of how much salary Atlanta has to take on. But a 4th round pick is a contributor. It's a person that helps you. They're just trying to offload a quarterback to make things simpler for Michael Penix. You know, I think they're more than happy to ride him and count on him and know that if there's an injury, they're not going to be the same team, as opposed to having Cousins, who's, you know, probably a solid backup for them, but complicates things. I think if you're ready to move on and make Penix the guy, and they are, I think getting him comfortable, part of that might be not having him look over his shoulder or worry that if he throws 3 picks in a game, they might turn to somebody else just because they have so much invested in them.
Before I let you go, obviously I know it's college related and not NFL, but you've covered Deion Sanders, if not your entire writing career, most of it. What did you make of everything that went on today in Colorado?
Yeah, I'm glad he's okay. Deion was out at Bucks practice last week to see his son Shiloh, who's a rookie safety here. And the first thing in seeing him is just that he looked like he had lost a considerable amount of weight. You worried for his health, and it was still unknown at that point. So to hear what he's going through, I mean, you're, you know, having to have your bladder removed, dealing with cancer there, that's scary. And to hear their language, I think his doctor was a Deion Sanders level confident in saying that they beat cancer and cancer is gone. And it's not always that easy. So you hope that that's the case and you hope that he's healthy and beyond adjusting to, you know, his current situation with his bladder. You hope that that's the worst of it and he can get his weight back and be healthy and not be, I think he's had 14 surgeries since 2021. Which is scary. I mean, that's a lot to deal with, especially when you're in the public eye as much as he is. So certainly hope he's okay. I mean, that personality is something where he's so polarizing and people love him, people hate him. But I think the sport's better with him, and I certainly hope he's healthy enough to keep coaching.
Greg, appreciate the time as always. We'll be checking you out at Fox Sports and foxsports.com, and we'll chat again soon.
All right, man. Have a good one. Take care.
All right.